chances are that when you are appointed into a new group, you and your leadership have been talking about that for quite a while, weeks, maybe months, if you came as an external person, maybe even a year before you actually come into that, depending on the level. And you've had time to really think about what you want to do different, how you want to make your mark, and how you want to move that team forward. If you're coming from as an internal transfer, chances are you probably know of that group that you're about to take on. Maybe you've been a customer of that group. Maybe you have some sort of adjacency with it and know of it, but you've had enough observation from afar to know you've got some real ideas and plans about what you want to do differently. So you've had time to think about it. You've had time to process it. Chances are that that team has not, because sometimes it can happen. Their previous leader, or maybe they've been without a leader, but maybe that ends on a Friday and you show up on a Monday and they may be thinking, well, what just happened and who are you and what's going on here? And it's tempting to go in maybe pounding your chest or just having all the right answers. And you want to try to impress the team and impress your leadership particularly and say, okay, in so many words, you've been doing it wrong all along. So here I am. I've come to save the day. I've come to set you straight. I've come to make things right because you don't know what you're doing. And that is so disrespectful. And you may not say those words, but you Yes. can say it with your actions and even your body language.
Welcome to Manager to Manager, a podcast about the experiences of people leaders and how we can enable them to lead engaged, healthy, and high-performing teams. I'm Kamaria Scott, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we learn, lead, and succeed together.
Welcome, friends, to another episode of Manager to Manager. As you know, I always try to bring you people that are either in my personal network or people who have been recommended to me by someone that I know. And it really allows me to make sure that the people I bring in front of you are authentically wonderful people leaders. So today is extra special because I get to bring to you not only someone that I know, but someone who has actually been a people leader to me. So I'm excited to introduce you to Melissa Anderson. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be part of what you're doing and the movement that you're making.
Oh, thank you so much. I have been wanting to get you on the show for a while. You're one of the people that I originally thought of when I first formed this podcast, because I was really excited about people, again, that I knew were great people leaders. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You can tell them how we met and what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's a good place to start, kind of working backwards. I'll tell what I'm doing now. I am the chief operating officer for a firm that focuses on recruiting and solutions in the energy space. And it actually connects to most of my background, which has been in energy with working with business process improvements and systems. And I had several roles in companies in that regard. So I've kind of come back to that after taking a detour into customer experience and learning. And we met at FIS most recently in the Global Learning Team because I had been asked to run that team as part of responsibility for the overall learning and development for the company. And you were already a leader on that team along with some of your peers. And so I'll have to say it made it so much easier really to live what we're going to talk about today, stepping into a team with you on it and some of the others, because you made me feel so welcome and just helped to really advance what we were trying to do going forward. And prior to that, I had several roles within FIS. I actually haven't worked for many companies, but I've had many roles. I've had many jobs. And within that, almost 17 years in FIS, I had leadership roles in customer experience, as well as organization development. And prior to that, as mentioned, I worked for energy, trading, and pipeline companies in process and system improvements. So I've always been around some sort of software or technology systems in companies. And it's just only in the latter years I moved back into learning, which is actually where I started. I have a degree in education and was going to teach high school social studies. But when I did student teaching with seventh graders, I thought there's I'm just not that special to do that. So I left that for someone else to do.
Try something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. So here we are.
So here we are. And I think what's interesting is that you mentioned that we met when you took over our team, but actually I remember we met when you were doing customer experience, because one of the first things that I did when I joined FIS was join your team, sort of figure out how do our teams partner together to scale the customer experience course that your team had designed. So I knew a little bit about you before you took over our team, which is why I was actually quite excited. But that does bring us to today's topic, which is it's something that many leaders have found themselves in, is when they really are joining an existing team. I think when we talk about people leadership, people always assume that you are the hiring manager and you get to form this team on your own. But there are many times when an existing leader leaves and you've been selected to come in and move that team forward. So I'm excited to share with them what you've learned from your experience in doing that. It's not easy, but we've all found ourselves in that situation. So let's just jump right in.
We shall do that. But I do want to go back to something you said earlier about how we first met. You're right. We did meet. And what's so memorable about that in my teaching that course that day, every instructor likes to find the person in the audience who smiles back and who nods and gives some sort of indication that they're engaged. And you always did that for me. So again, it's that welcoming feeling that you've always given me whenever we've encountered each other. So yeah, fond memories of that. So thank you.
Absolutely.
On to the topic of today, I'm actually going to share three things with you. You're absolutely right that It's most often, probably 90% of the time, when a leader comes into an organization, they are taking on a team that already exists. Maybe there's been some slight changes, but it's rare that a leader gets to come in and they start from complete scratch and gets to hire and appoint or transfer or move the people and only the people that they know or know of. So often as a leader, you're coming into a group and you may be a complete stranger to them. And as I mentioned, I've had many jobs at a few companies, and this has been the case for me. And in every situation where I've taken on a different department or a role, even an individual contributor role, but just being in a situation that's new to me has been the case, I guess, probably 100% of the time. And I formulated these guidelines for myself after having violated all of them first, you know, so you learn those lessons and hopefully you learn from them and move on. And I'll characterize them like this. I'll name the three and then I'll talk about each one. The first one, here I am. I've come to save the day. That's right. Yeah, trumpets blaring and all. And the second one is read my lips, no new taxes. And then the third one will be beware the volunteer.
Okay. So those are intriguing. I love how you've given them titles that are memorable for people and they'll probably take these away. I'm so excited to jump into this one. So let's talk about here I am, I've come to save the day.
Sure. Chances are that when you are appointed into a new group, you and your leadership have been talking about that for quite a while, weeks, maybe months. If you came as an external person, maybe even a year before you actually come into that, depending on the level. And you've had time to really think about what you want to do different, how you want to make your mark, and how you want to move that team forward. If you're coming from as an internal transfer, chances are you probably know of that group that you're about to take on. Maybe you've been a customer of that group. Maybe you have some sort of adjacency with it and know of it, but you've had enough observation from afar to know you've got some real ideas and plans about what you want to do differently. So you've had time to think about it. You've had time to process it. Chances are that team has not, because sometimes it can happen. Their previous leader, or maybe they've been without a leader, but maybe that ends on a Friday and you show up on a Monday and they may be thinking, well, what just happened and who are you and what's going on here? And it's tempting to go in maybe pounding your chest or just having all the right answers. And you want to try to impress the team and impress your leadership particularly and say, okay, in so many words, you've been doing it wrong all along. So here I am. I've come to save the day. I've come to set you straight. I've come to make things right because you don't know what you're doing. And that is so disrespectful. And you may not say those words, but you yes. can say it with your actions and even your body language.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea here is to take it slow, meet them where they are, respect what they have already done, and most definitely respect the departing leader for whatever reason that has been, and find out what they've tried. If there have been some challenges, maybe you probably have gotten some feedback from your peer group about what's wrong with that group, but understand what the challenges are to know that they don't just come in. I don't believe that anyone just comes to work every day and think, how can I do my worst possible job?
Yes.
You know, so you really have to understand what's happening and be on that journey with them and enroll people into, well, this is where I see where you've been, but this is where we can go and this is what we can do together. So that's what I mean by don't go in guns a-blazing, trumpets blaring that, okay, finally you're going to do it right because I'm here. That's,
yeah,
you'll be humbled very quickly.
Very quickly. And I remember a scenario similar to that where we had a new HR leader take over. And what's so interesting, especially in HR, is that a lot of times we will bring in a leader into HR, kind of like yourself, who didn't sort of grow up in HR. They grew up in the business. And so they were on the receiving end of HR services. And so we had a leader come in and say, in the field, you all do not have a great reputation, but I'm here now. And I remember being in that meeting with one of my colleagues and we were all like, oh my goodness. Okay. Well, all right. Thanks for sharing that. And what I hear you saying though, is that when you're taking over a team, there has to be this almost concerted effort to earn people's followership and get them to trust you and to be open to hearing the new vision that you might have for the team. But that doesn't happen if you come in guns a-blazing and really just telling people, here's where you went wrong all these years, but now I'm here. So conversely then, what would you say is the opposite of that? You are now in your first 90 days with your new team. And you have seen some things that maybe you want to change, or you do have some experiences with that team that you want to maybe put in front of them to have them think differently about how they might provide their services. How do you do that in a more positive way?
It's a lot like a consultant's approach. If done well, it's going in, asking a lot of questions, making some observations, making up your own mind, and taking it all in, but still forming your own observations based on the experience that you have. You're in that role because you have experience and some expectations about what are the possibilities. So be confident in that. But ask a lot of questions and make observations. And one exercise that is really helpful is very simple. It's get, if it's depending on your group size, maybe it's the whole group, but a subset of that, and just do, what do you do well? And what would you like to do differently? Approach it from their point of view, get their own mindset about what they think their strengths and areas of improvement are. And chances are they will name at least 60% of the things that maybe you had a notion about or you'd been told about. And if they use the words that they say it themselves, then all the better. Just makes it that much easier. And it makes it easier when you can fill in what's that 40% gap that maybe they're not identifying and maybe not listening to. And it's about the questioning. Well, what if, and can you imagine if we were to do it this way? And what would be the outcome if we tried this approach versus that? Is that even possible? So it's a very consultative, collaborative conversation. But the more you can get them to say what the strengths and even the weaknesses or improvement areas are, the better your footing and foundations to take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something even in there about the way that you talk to people in that. And I always think about like words and deeds and even the impact that you have with someone, whether or not you can almost disarm them. Because, you know, I think about a time where I took over an existing team and really had to work to win them over. It wasn't even necessarily about the vision or what they'd done wrong. It was more so about who are you? Why not someone on my team? why not one of us who was already here?
Yeah.
And so even your approach of like, we're going to bring everybody along. We're going to collaboratively think about where we might improve. It's not just what I want. I think the process of that, it's really helping you win people over and inviting them to be on this journey with you. Have you always been able to do that? Or did you learn how to not necessarily just ask the questions, but how you approach and have those interpersonal conversations with people that invite them in and start to earn trust? And maybe even overcome some of the, why not me? Why wasn't I chosen? Who was this person from the outside?
It's a good question. And in fact, it's reflective of the journey I've been on that culminates in this first point about not being the one who comes in to say, here I am, I come to save the day, because I did that in the beginning. I made the assumption that everyone would just be, and in this case, they knew me, but everyone would just be thrilled that it was me. And I was so ignorant and naive about what their needs and even others who might have had designs on or their eye on that position themselves. And I was just completely blind to it and just ignored it. And through, I think, just living life, it comes down to just respecting another, just respecting another person and understanding where they come from and making it about them first and not you. It's a good life lesson. And then you fast forward, and the team before our team that we worked together on, I actually knew I had that information that all three of the managers who would be reporting to me had applied for that job. Mm-hmm. And I did a group call with them and just approached it. I didn't want to say explicitly that I knew that, but I just acknowledged. Now, you all have been around for a while, and chances are this might have been something you've had your eyes on to do. And I'm honored to be appointed in the position. And I see us as a leadership team, a management team, that we're going to do these things together. So it was something in that way to still respect what they bring to it, but not, you know, well, too bad it's me, not you. You know, you don't say that. And most people aren't using that harsh of a language, but you can say those things even if you don't mean to. They can come across in that way.
And I like what you said, that you make it about them, because going back to your earlier point, people do want to be successful. They do want to provide good services, good products, the client, their colleagues. And so positioning it as, together we're going to get there. Together we're still going to fulfill the vision of what you have for yourselves and for the organization is a great way for alignment to bring people over. So I love that. Let's move on to the next one. I'm excited to talk about this one. Read my lips, no new taxes.
Right.
Tell me about that one.
This is a fun one, and I'm sure your listeners will either look it up or remember George H.W. Bush, as part of his campaign platform, says, read my lips, no new taxes. And he was very adamant about that as part of his platform of why he should be elected. Now, in the end, history played out. He didn't necessarily raise taxes, but he had to do some other things that were in the same effect of raising costs for people. And what that means is, don't make promises you can't keep. Again, if you're coming into an organization or a team that you're taking on, and you're going to hear from your peers and from others who have experienced that group in the organization all the things that they should be doing differently. And you're going to hear from the team itself, we want to do things differently. We want to do things in this way, but it's that other team or that other department or that other leader that's holding us back. If only other people would do things the right way, then we could do our jobs. It could be something even more egregious. Maybe you hear some stories about just abuse that team may have undergone from maybe a previous leader or an adjacent leader that's upstream of them or downstream of them, but just some real horror stories, which I have experienced. And your temptation is to be an immediate champion and say, well, don't you worry, I'm going to fix that. And that's not going to happen on my watch. And I'll go talk to that leader over there and I'll straighten him or her out, and you'll never have this problem again. Mm-hmm. That is so dangerous to promise, because you don't know always the whole story. You may not have, one, the authority to change whatever, you know, process or bureaucratic thing is set in place that's hindering them, and or you may not have the influence to change that situation over, especially exerting that maybe over a peer or another leader in the organization. So you just have to be careful not to make those promises you can't keep. Again, it goes back to listening. And so what's happening and what does that cause for you? How does that make you feel? And is there anything, and what if we did some things differently to affect that outcome such that we're not dependent on the other things that these teams impose on us? What could we do together first before we try to tackle anything outside of our own group?
That's a really interesting point, because no team is autonomous. No team operates in its own bubble. And part of being a people leader is not only leading your team, but it's the relationships that you have with other teams, with other leaders, and things of that nature. What I hear you saying, though, is really focus on what's in your sphere of control. And so you can't come in promising to sprinkle pixie dust on everything and make everything rainbows and butterflies and sunshine. But think about what are those problems that the team is presenting to you, and help them think about how they navigate those problems instead of, I'm just going to wipe them away and make it all better for us.
Right. Yeah. It is. You want to be their champion and advocate, but don't let them make you a savior or a messiah. You know, history is full of these stories of an oppressed people, you know, putting a lot of stock in this one person who's been coming
leader.
In to fix things. You know, you just can't do that. That's just dangerous. You'll lose their credibility, your credibility, their trust in you, and certainly your trust and credibility among your peers and other leaders.
What stands out to me from that is there's a lot of complexity in people leading. And there's a lot of things that even as we're leading our teams, that we don't often have the privilege of talking to them about or sharing with them. And in absence of being able to give them the promise or being able to come back to them and say, I can fix that, there's still that balance of trying to earn their trust and trying to, you still want them to bring their challenges to you. You still want to hear what they have to say, and you do want to make things better from them. So in absence of those things, how do you then go in and say, okay, you might be struggling with how that leader approaches you or that particular situation. How do you empower them to navigate through the changes so they don't feel powerless, or they don't feel like, well, there's no point in talking about it because nothing's going to change anyway?
Yeah. It again comes back to listening and really trying to quantify and qualify what their own challenges are. So it's again, it's not trying to bring in, here's what everybody else is saying about what you're doing well or wrong. What do you think? What is it that may be blocking this group from higher standard of service or world-class service, whatever it is that you're trying to do? And I do like a quadrant type of approach where you can measure impact versus effort, and what are some low effort but high impact types of things that you could actually do and demonstrate in the beginning. And an example I've had, and I've done this more than once, is inevitably there's a team that has been mandated by a previous leader to do status reports, write up a status report.
Yes.
Or put their time in a time tracking system. Even professional salaried people are asked to do this. And I know for a fact that I am not going to look at their status reports. I would rather have a conversation with you one-on-one each week and find out for sure and have it back and forth. And I also could place some good money on bets that there is no one in the organization looking at how they're spending their time. Those are low effort, high impact things that I have complete control of and I can take away right then and there. Just stop this. So everybody has saved an hour a week and the stress of having to do it. And if you categorize those things and prioritize what can we do together, and then what's a big thing that's high effort and high impact, and just may take some time to do that, then we make a plan to do it. And but again, it's not making promises, but it's help me find the right path to get there, what's the outcome? Why is this going to be different? Why would that person or that group or that leader want to do anything different? And do we have control over those results?
Two things that I find interesting about what you said. One is, when we talk about employee engagement, we talk about what has the most impact on a team or an individual's experience. It's typically their immediate work unit. And so when I heard you say, let's look at, maybe there's some habits and things that you were doing before now that happen within our universe. Let's tackle those things first. Because if I can make the working together with us better, I probably would honestly solve 70% of what people are unhappy about. And then if there are major things outside of our team, we can look at it and think about how might we approach it thoughtfully to maybe get to a different outcome. But that's still a path. And then sometimes those efforts are unsuccessful, but at least the team know that they tried and they feel good about that. So dealing with what's within your sphere, within your circle first, solving for that, and then finding those high impact things that might be outside of your circle, but thinking about how do we maybe even take the same approach that you had earlier of being consultative to figure out how we can impact those things as well.
That's right. That's right. And maybe there's some roadmap things that you want to put, you know, on a document that gives everybody that type of inspiration of this is what we're tackling first. And then next quarter we'll do this and next quarter we'll do that. But just something that memorializes what your team has said and a visual checking off the list. Okay, we've solved that one. Now what's next? And just keep marching toward that.
Yeah. I like the idea of the memorializing part too, because I think when they can see progress, when they can see these are the challenges that you presented when I first got here, here are a couple of things that we've solved together. I often encourage managers to use like a stoplight report where they're sort of like, okay, let's dump everything onto the table and figure out what matters to you. Here, green light are the things that are in our sphere. I can fix these right away for you. You don't want to do timer sheets, they're done. Yellow, let's investigate how we might approach that. Let's do a further discussion. Maybe let's figure out a pathway to change those things. Red, I hear you, I feel you, I acknowledge you, but here may be some things that we can't change and here's why. And sometimes that's the answer that and it is, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about is the impact on you as the people leader. Having taken over a team and sort of been in the middle of the transition, how the team is feeling, the expectations from leadership, that puts an incredible amount of pressure on you as the new leader. How do you work through some of the stress of that or just the personal impact as a human going through this experience?
Well, thanks for asking that. I would boil it down to two things. One is I do, and a leader has to believe that people want to show up and give their best every day. That is a genuine heart-based belief that you have to have in order to look at a person as a half full versus half empty. And those who are half empty will reveal themselves soon enough, but you give everybody an A+ to start with and let them keep it or not. That's just a belief. But the second thing is, and this has actually served me in the volunteer work that I do as well, is to leave something better than I found it. I don't stress myself by going after perfection. Mm-hmm. I go after progress. And I try to be humble enough to know that I'm never going to make it perfect. It's not me. There will be somebody who comes along after me that has even better ideas or is better in a different way than I am. And we'll take that team or that thing or that service forward. I have this strong drive to do just that. I'm getting this team or this service or this product, whatever it is, and if I can make it 10%, 40%, 60% better than I found it for the next person, then I myself am satisfied with that. I also believe that that is a pace for the people involved who are doing that, and probably is fair and kind to people as to how much they can actually contribute along that journey. So that's what just, I guess, keeps me calm, because I have a confidence around that, because I just have such an inner belief about it, that that's what's gonna, that the end result is not perfection, but that it's better than it was whatever time period ago.
I love that. One of the reasons why I literally love talking to people, leaders, is I think we can always learn something from each other. It's when you hear it from somebody that understands the challenge and the experience, it's very different than having someone talk at you. And I feel like in this moment, you've just taught me something. Personally, I'm like, oh, high achiever, I want it to be great. But thinking about the impact that might have on the people that I've led, and even the incredible stress and pressure I might put on myself to get it somewhere, and maybe just thinking, but how do we get it incrementally better? How do we make it a journey? It's funny, we might use that in the training and things that we create for other people, but sometimes we have to be reminded ourselves that it applies to us. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the last point, beware the volunteer. All right, I see red flags waving all over the place. I'd love to hear what you have to share there.
This has also been something that I've succumbed to in my career and not had the best consequences. So I've just learned this as a mantra. And what this means is when you come into a new group, a different group, you're likely replacing a previous leader and they've left for whatever reason. And to me, it's happened every single time. Someone emerges who says, in so many words, I want to be your second in command. I want to be your number two. I want to be able to receive the delegation of authority when you're out, or I want to be able to grow because I want your position one day. I know I'm not ready for it today, but I want that one day. And early in my career, when that happened, I was, oh my goodness, yes, please help me. Because I was at that time, I think I was 28 and my first supervisory job, and everybody else who was in the group had probably been working that long. And here I was, this young person, I had no idea what I was doing. And so I was welcome to help. And what I didn't realize is that this gentleman who had, I think, you know, noble intentions of helping himself advance and helping me, that nobody could stand in. And I didn't know that. I didn't take the time to learn that, to learn how undermining that was for me, because I had just endorsed a person that nobody liked, no one thought he was effective, and no one trusted him. So I was too hasty about that. And as time has gone on and I've learned this, I've just learned to be wary, but also be respectful of that person who comes forth. And I've learned to make that distinction between a person who can and a person who will. And sometimes the person who will is the one who will step forward, because the person who can probably has already got 8 more things that they're doing and is the most capable, but isn't necessarily thinking, what one more thing can I take on?
Yeah.
And this happens in my volunteer work as well. It's, you're dealing with all volunteers, but sometimes you do need to make that distinction between who can and who will, and hold out. You know, take that person's request and say, thank you for doing that. You know, I'm still learning about the team. I'm not sure what I need just yet, but I'll take that under advisement. I appreciate that you're putting yourself forward and that you want to grow in that way. But let me sit on that for a while and we'll talk about it later. So that's what that means is sometimes the people who are quick to volunteer for that second in command in particular are maybe likely not the right fit.
Yes. What that reminds me of is really the importance of knowing your team. You said this in the beginning, how important it is when you join a team to observe and to just watch. And where I spend a ton of time when I first take over a team, it is just figuring people out. There's a curiosity that you have about people to know for yourself what they can do, what they will do, why this person has so much free time. And because even sometimes they honestly might have the best of intentions. They might really genuinely want to help, but they may not have the capability for the thing that you need to do. And they're wanting it to be a stretch of growth assignment, but at the time, that doesn't even match what you need, because you need somebody who actually does have the capability. And it takes a while to sort out not only just, you know, what people's motivations are, but can I literally just hand it to you? Or am I going to have to take it back in 2 or 3 weeks because it's not being done properly? And so now I'm frustrated because it's back in my lap and I have to find somebody else. So I think what I hear from you is it's really important to figure out people and figure out what they can do, what other people think of them, because even they may not be well received with the task you gave them, and know that, spend that time beforehand before you start picking who's second.
Yeah. And it is having a one-to-one with each person to the extent that you can. Now, if you have a 200-person team, that may not be practical, but you've got a, you know, 8 to 10-person leadership and maybe a 15-person extended leadership team that you can get to know, because, and you let that person know that you're doing that with everybody. You're finding out what the capabilities are. So it's a fair assessment. You may find somebody, and this has happened to me as well. You may find somebody that's just quiet and reserved and completely capable and much more capable than that person would be, and just doesn't come forward. Maybe they're too busy, but they just don't come forward because they may not have the confidence yet to know that they are ready for that type of job. And you would have just missed them completely because you took the first offer.
The first person that would be.
Yeah, right.
And how do you have that conversation then, when you have to circle back and say, thank you for volunteering, I don't think this is the right fit for you right now? How do you have that conversation and still preserve the relationship?
That has a lot to do with being clear coming in on what your own leadership values are and articulating those fairly soon in the process. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to our first point. You don't go in guns blazing with, here I am now, here's what I believe in, and here's our leadership values. You collaborate so that those emerge from the team. And if you do that pretty early on, you can't. If you haven't, and this person has approached you, then that's a way to buy some time. It's like, you know what? Let me first assess what we need from leadership qualities in this team, and then we'll assess everybody. So assuming that you have, then it's just that courageous conversation that you have with that person that say, of the 5 things that we identified as a team, you're strong in these 3. These are some 2 areas you can work on, and I'm happy to coach you. I'm happy to help you or get you help in that way. But in the end, help them see that's accurate and that they accept that. And if they don't, then there's continued conversations about it. But you just got to kind of stick to your point about it, because in the end, it's what's best for them and best for the team. So it's about, you know, let's at least have a framework, and that makes it a little bit more objective than for you just to say, no, I don't think you're the right person.
Yeah, it gives them further direction. It almost turns the conversation from no to not now.
Right.
And I think people receive that a little bit better, because then it also directionally helps them understand their development areas. That if this truly is what they want, they want to be someone second in command, chief of staff person, here are some growth areas that they can address. So it doesn't necessarily shut them down. It just redirects them.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Again, when I think of you, I always think so wise, and you shared really great examples. I'm curious, if you think about where you started and where you are now, everything that you learned, and has it all been trial by fire, or have there been things that the organization has done along the way, teaching, coaching, training, that has helped you arrive at this state? So if someone hears you and they're like, I want to be her when I grow up, how do they get to this place of understanding about taking over a new team and these lessons learned?
I would say yes to all the above. And it's been a combination. I've been blessed to have some really good leaders and managers that I've worked for, and I've learned something from each of them. By the way, if I know you're familiar with, but your listeners are familiar with Clifton StrengthsFinders, Learner is my number 4. So I'm already in the mode of absorbing things as I go along. So that's one thing. And I am a constant learner. So I listen to podcasts and read books that are of interest to me and just helping me get better just as a human being, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. And what comes out of that is a leader, whether it's in business or in your volunteer organization or a friend or a partner or whatever, I feel like that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's like a tapestry, I think, that comes together, or even a picture on the front of a puzzle box. And there's lots of pieces in there, and you know what the picture it is that you want it to look like, but you got to arrange all the pieces together to make it. And I just feel, I have a personal philosophy that we as humans are in a constant state of formation.
Yes. And
formation around whatever, you know, fuels and drives you, if it's spiritual or professional or personal, and hopefully it's all of those things that makes a person well-rounded and adjusted and just a good person and on the quest to be a better person than you were yesterday, and tomorrow you'll be even better. That's what really drives me. And so it's hard to say what are the lessons I've learned, because it's everything. Yes. Along the way. And it's hard. And I will say I'll never be finished. You know, yes. I am a constant work in progress. And if I am better than I found me a week ago or a month ago, five years ago, that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh gosh, I love that. And I literally wrote words down, because what jumped out at me was self-awareness and intentionality. There is the self-awareness of who do I want to be and how do I want to present to the world? And that's not just even as an air quotes leader in an organization, but we could have a whole other conversation about who you are and how you lead are not two different things. And if you really are wanting to be the best leader you can be, you do have to be introspective about who you are and how you approach the world. And then really, no matter what the situation is, you're always going to approach it in a way that reflects your values without having to overstate. And you're always going to look back and say, did I have the impact that I wanted? Am I further away from that? I thought someone asked me a week ago about something that I have been struggling with. And she's like, well, you know, have you learned the lesson? And I was like, we'll find out when I get the next test. I don't know. I can tell you maybe yes, but when the next situation arrives, we'll see how I handle it. And that'll let me know whether or not I've learned the lesson. So acknowledging that as leaders and humans, we're still a work in progress. So I love that. I have one last question for you. And again, it's my new favorite question to ask people. And I know how I think of you as my own former people leader, but in the spirit of intentionality, when you think about how you want people to think of you, how you want to be known when people look back and say, I used to report to Melissa, how do you want to be remembered as a people leader?
I'll keep coming back to leave something better than I found it. And that can be a person too, because I can attribute my own journey and formation to other people and the way they found me and the way they left me when they moved on or are no longer a part of my life for whatever reason. And I feel like that's my duty. It is a God-given responsibility to ensure that I am doing what I have with my own talents and skills to bring out the best talents and skills in other people. And so if a person feels like they are different, they are better, they are happier, they are more effective, they are more whatever, having had some encounter with me, whether that was just asking for directions or a 5-year relationship in an employee setting, then that's how I would like to be remembered. I don't have designs on doing grandiose things or, you know, famous projects or being famous or anything like that. It's just as a person, if it's something I did to help them get better at whatever it is they're doing, especially as a human being or a leader themselves, then that's what would be fulfilling for me.
I love that. If I could give you a standing ovation, I would.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. So impactful. Well, I want to thank you for your time. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I'm sure that the listeners have learned so much. And even though I know you, I still learned something from this conversation. So I want to just thank you. And if people wanted to reach out to you and connect, is LinkedIn the best way to do that?
Absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. That would be great. I would welcome it.
Wonderful. I'll put your link in the show notes. So on behalf of all the listeners, I want to just thank you for your time and all that you've shared. And if you are listening, I encourage you to make sure that you are being introspective about who you are and how you're choosing to lead. And think about, if you've recently taken over a team, how you can apply the lessons learned that Melissa has shared with us to your own journey. We would love to see you succeed and really just gaining a new team and helping them to be successful. So on behalf of Melissa and myself, thank you for listening to Manager to Manager, and take care of yourself and each other.